Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. This is our Friday news roundup, so welcome one and all. We've got lots of news from the week, and we'll start off with the Biden administration trying to unseat the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and look at the Robert Hur transcripts and testimony. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back. So, Victor, this is very strange, I think, that Biden seems to be involved in trying to dismantle, hurt, do something to Netanyahu. And don't you think it's strange that they are attacking a leader of one of our leading allies, especially in the Middle East?
I mean, it's insurrectionary. They love that word. But since when does the United States government, I mean, we always talk about Mossadegh and the Iranian Revolution. It was our fault that the theocracy came in because the Shah came in, and the Shah came in because we got rid of Mossadegh, British Patrol. Okay. But this is worse. This is the President of the United States, first of all, saying, I'm going to have a come to Jesus moment with a head of the Jewish state. And then we have the Senate majority leader basically calling for the removal of the Netanyahu government. I mean, there's a couple of sidelights to this story. Chuck Schumer is really an insurrectionist. You got to remember that in 2020, he got out in front of the Supreme Court in a mob of anti-pro-life demonstrators. Then he turned to the Supreme Court and he yelled at the doors of the Supreme Court. And he said, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, you sowed the wind. You're going to reap the whirlwind. You won't know what hit you. When you collate that with what happened when the assassin showed up at Kavanaugh's home and the administration didn't do anything when they swarmed the homes of the Supreme Court, just conservative Supreme Court, then you add in Biden's attack directly at the justices in the State of the Union. This guy is a very dangerous guy. You don't do that. You don't get into the internal affairs of another country. And if you talk to Israelis, and I've just done in the last month maybe three or four podcasts with Israeli journalists. I get emails all the time. The United States doesn't know what it's doing. Netanyahu is not to the right of the Israeli people. If anything, he's right in the center. There is an enormous public support in Israel for preempting and dealing with the Hezbollah threat because 20 to 30,000 Israelis don't have anywhere to live because of the rocketing. And when they look at Iran, they think, wow, we've got 100,000 people deployed, we're shrinking GDP. This is a maximum pressure of Iran to destroy us emotionally, financially, economically, and we've got to hit back. We've got to destroy Hamas, and we've got to so deter Hezbollah they don't dare send missiles into our border settlements, and we've ultimately got to deal with Iran. And Netanyahu is not on the wrong side of Israeli public opinion. If they get someone else, if that someone else agrees, if they get one of Bennett or one of these other people, and he agrees to U.S. pressure, and he lets Hamas, after all these months, they've finally cornered Hamas. They've destroyed 75% of the tunnel's utility. They have them all trapped. No leader will be politically viable in Israel to do what the United States wants them to do. So I don't get that. If he wants to interfere in the sovereign business of one of our greatest democratic allies and remove their president, I suggest he go to Ukraine. And he says this to Mr. Zelensky. Mr. Zelensky, this is Joe Biden. And I've got some, get the teleprompter. I got some ideas for you. And he can just say this. We pressured the Israeli government to have a war cabinet. We didn't do that for you. But because we didn't do that, Mr. Zelensky, you've done the following three things. You've suspended habeas corpus. You have outlawed all political parties. And you've canceled elections. And you're running Ukraine as a dictator. But if that's what he wants to do, is to interfere in the internal affairs of a sovereign government, but why would he do it to a democratic government that has broad public support? It's because that they view Netanyahu as a right-wing extremist and they hate right-wing, quote-unquote, extremists. So now we are on the side of Hamas. We're going to go into this place and we're going to put an artificially mulberry, you know, D-Day type harbor in there, and then we're going to bring huge cargo ships in. And we're just going to supply these guys with all everything they need. Hamas will steal it all, make money on the black market. And we'll probably have a Kabul-like incident at the airport where there's going to be a bunch of mobs that rush the U.S. port to get the food. And there will be suicide bombers among them. And then if that happens, we know what the Biden administration will do. It'll do just what it did in Afghanistan. It will leave. So this is a stupid idea. We're rewarding Hamas. If Israel ceases the final destruction of Hamas that's completely surrounded, then all of this is for naught. They didn't do the job. They did the job. We didn't allow them. Hamas wins and gets rewarded for October 7th. This administration is really, I understand that they're caving to the squad, to Bernie Sanders, to the Obamas, to Elizabeth Warren, but I think they've got it wrong, too. I think that whatever they pick up with the 250,000 Arab American voters who were going to supposedly bolt, I don't think they were ever going to bolt. I think they were going to vote for Biden no matter what. And let's just say they're going to vote. And so they're net zero, aren't they? But what they may do, there's 3 million Jews in the United States, and they give a lot more money to the Democratic Party than to the Arab American community, and they vote in greater numbers. And I think he may ensure a 50-50 split in the Jewish voters, which could make a difference in some close states, but it will make a difference in Canada. If you were a Jewish American, would you give a dime to this administration if you felt that Israel was essential to the survival of Jewish people? I wouldn't give a dime.
No.
They're just pressuring them and pressuring them and pressuring them and interfering. And it's not new, by the way. Bill Clinton sent people over to make sure Netanyahu was not elected in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to the Robert Herr transcripts, which were recently released. And he also did testimony before Congress. And it seems to show that Biden willfully retained classified documents after office. And he seems to have violated the Espionage Act by any interpretation. But I'm wondering what you think about those hearings. Did Herr do any favors for Democrats or Republicans?
Well, you know, I had to drive to work So it's now a four-hour drive. So I had the misfortune of listening to the entire 4 hours. The only bright spot was our favorite congressman, Hank Johnson.
Oh, no.
Admiral, if they all go over to one side of Guam, are you afraid they'll flip the island over? What was great without that testimony, the admiral looks at him. Are you effing crazy? But he can't say that. He goes, since you're a lunatic and you live in outer space, Mr. Johnson, we've never had anybody that idiotic ask a question like, but he said, we'll take that under consideration. So he said to her, you know, isn't it true that you're a Republican? Isn't it true that you're trying to get something out of this? Isn't it true that you want to be a judge? And isn't it true that you think Trump will appoint you? It's like Fannie Willis. I mean, it's just.
Except her as cool as a cucumber.
Well, his big. He was very shifty, though, in a weird way. He knew that the Democrats were going to come after him for what he did was very smart. He said to himself, and I'm postulating, he looked at the evidence and he said to himself, Joe Biden is guilty as hell. He's taken these records for over 40 years. He's put them not one, not two, not three. He's put them in 9 different places. The pictures of that garage with the broken cardboard and that sloppy stuff everywhere. And he knows he did it. In 2017, he says on tape to his speechwriter, I got some classified stuff. Be careful. That guy didn't have a security clearance. And so he's guilty, and everybody knows he's guilty, and her knows he's done for if he suggests that a sitting president be indicted, right? So he's got to do what the James Comey solution was. James Comey looked at Hillary and he said, oh my God, she's using a private home-cooked server to transmit classified information. She destroyed classified and regular emails that were under subpoena. Oh my God, she's destroyed mobile devices of communication with a sledgehammer to destroy their heart. She's guilty, but no sane jury would indict her. And so he said the same thing, but he had a little twist. He thought, uh-oh. So everybody knows that Biden is guilty. Everybody knows it's very asymmetrical in comparison to what Jack Smith's doing to Trump. Everybody knows that because Jack Smith is a Democrat, they set me up as a Republican. They say, well, a Republican investigated Trump and a Biden and a Democrat. Okay, independent, whatever Smith claims he is. But the point I'm making is, so he was never going to indict Joe Biden, but he had to give something, you know what I mean? Something to make him look credible. And I say credible because he's not credible, because the evidence was overwhelming. And so the bone he threw out there was, he's a nice, kindly old man that can't remember. So they got upset, you know, and so what basically, he really outsmarted the Democrats. Each person who interviewed him was just screaming at, how dare you say that Joe Biden is crazy? You see the State of the Union? And everybody's listening, yeah, we saw the State of the Union, an angry old man screaming. And then the next day, when his Adderall wore off or whatever he was on, he said he was to vote for him as a congressperson from Pennsylvania, and then he bragged about the July 6th episode at the Capitol. Then he said he just raised the debt higher than any other president in history. Then he finally urged all of us to go out and get our vaccinations. So he showed just what Robert heard, and he knew that Biden would make the case for him. So that helped him. So the Republicans were trying to say, well, wait a minute, you found all this evidence. You never said he was exonerated. No, I didn't. And you didn't indict him? No, because we felt that he had faulty memory. And the Democrats are so angry. So it was like, I stood up to the Democrats. I'm not a partisan. So I gave you a bone. I said that that Biden was non compos mentis, but you should appreciate that. Well, half the Republicans fell for that and praised him to the skies, but the other halves were pretty good. And they understood two things. It's not sustainable to indict Donald Trump for removing classified files and then arresting him when they didn't, indicting him and maybe imprisoning him when they gave Joe Biden, Mr. Herr did, a pass for A, more locations, not one, but probably nine, two, longer periods of possession, 45 years versus two, three. Anybody that drives by Mar-a-Lago and looks at that place, and you compare it to Joe's garage, one is secure and one isn't secure. Number four, Donald Trump, had he just taken the time and wrote a little memo and said, these files are hereby declassified, had the ability to do that. Joe Biden did not. Number five, how in the world, everybody should listen to this, how in the world is Jack Smith getting away with leveraging Trump aides to turn state's evidence at Mar-a-Lago? In other words, he'd gone to these people who moved the files around, and he said, you know what, we're going to put you as an auxiliary to a conspiracy unless you rat out Donald Trump, when the speechwriter had these tapes. And on the tapes, there was admission that Joe Biden knew there were classified files, A, that he'd taken them out unlawfully, B, and C, he had disclosed their contents to a person who had no classified ranking. So those were three felonies. And then what had happened, D? The speechwriter kept it in 2017. He had his little tape in 2018. He had it in 1920. And then suddenly, he erased it in 2020. Now, why did he erase it? Because the special counsel, Herr, asked him to produce the tape. And you know what he said? I erased it. And Herr said, basically, you destroyed evidence. Well, I did, because I was afraid that it was going to be hacked. I mean, how do you hack a tape, you know?
Yeah.
So my point is, how can they go after aides of Trump when this aide, or whatever you want to call him, deliberately destroyed evidence that was under request by the special counsel? They didn't do anything to him. He said, we didn't do anything to him. Why didn't you do anything to him? Why didn't you indict him? Well, he was well-meaning, and he thought it might be. That was just so bogus. They didn't do anything, because if they had arrested him and charged him with destroying subpoenaed evidence, they would have taken him in, if they're a normal federal prosecutor, and they said, listen, you little pencil neck SOB, you sit down right there, and we're going to destroy you unless you tell us every time you met Joe Biden, all of the classified information he told you. And you do that, and we'll let you go. He didn't do that. No. They're doing it with Trump's aides. Yeah. And so it was a mockery. But he's a very smart guy. He was very good in his answers. And he sliced and diced away at these cheap shots from the Democrats, who were mad that he told the truth about the mental incapacity of Joe Biden. Some of the Republicans fell for that and said, well, all the Democrats hate him. And he did at least tell the truth that Joe was not there. But there were a few Republicans that were really smart and got to the issue. Why didn't you indict him? If you say that he was culpable and he broke the law and his aide broke the law and you didn't indict him when it's not a question of resources. Well, you know, DA must make a decision, cost-benefit analysis, which case can go to trial and convince a jury. No, you had unlimited resources. So you could have at least tried. And it's not your duty to psychoanalyze a jury to the degree that, you know, that you think they're going to be feeling sorry for Joe. Because apparently, Mr. Herr, there's about, I don't know, eight Democrats that are get cross-examining you who are swearing that Joe Biden is crystal clear. And you're trying to tell him, no, he's not crystal clear. A jury would find him guilty if he were crystal clear. But because they don't find him crystal clear, they won't convict him. But these people tell you you're crazy. So you don't have any consensus. It's like saying that, Well, Donald Trump called, who did he call? He called Nancy Pelosi somebody. He called, he mixed names up, people suggested the other day. He can just say to Jack Smith now, you know, sometimes I just mix names up. And, you know, Jack, you're never going to convince a jury because I'm empathetic. I lose my memory. So I don't know what's going on. Or you should just do that mafia thing, like Godfather, you know, where the Godfather comes in. He's, I forgot. Or, you know, I was in the Gambino family, the guy that kept his zipper open. He wore no socks and he shuffled around Brooklyn and he said, I'm crazy and I don't know anything. And the guy was guilty. It was all an act.
Guilty as hell.
So, you know, Trump should wear some big Biden, you know, clown shoes that have big soles on them that Biden's wearing now. And he get that grimace and he can walk like Biden and just say, I don't know. And that's, I guess that's a legitimate set. All of us listening, listen to what this very important prosecutor told you. If you get indicted, just start mumbling. And then the prosecutor will say, I can't take you to trial. You'd be too sympathetic because you're just an old person or a crazy person. They don't think like that. I can tell you, I've met a lot of prosecutors, federal prosecutors, state prosecutors. They do not think like Mr. Hur does. Mm-hmm. He's lying when he says that all prosecutors have to judge the actions of their jury. Their attitude is, I don't give an F about the jury. I'm going to take this little pencil neck and I'm going to prosecute him and squeeze every inch of air out of him until he cracks. And that's how they act. And so I just a joke. The whole thing is a joke.
Yeah.
That I don't know how Jack Smith can even proceed after what they did and exonerated Biden when he was guilty as hell. It just doesn't make any sense. And when you add the Fannie Willis thing, the judge just threw out, I don't know, was it six counts?
Yes.
And if they find, if the judge is up for re-election, you hear what he said today? Well, it's true. I want to reassure everybody, if you think that I'm going to be partisan and pull my punches just because I'm running for election and the special election, you got another. I wrote a draft. It was the stupidest thing I ever heard. He said, I've already written a draft of what I'm saying. Yeah, Judge, the key word was draft. So if you think there's pressure, you can change your draft. That was so silly. The fact that it's kind of like saying, I don't want to tell anybody. If you think that I just shoplifted, I have a draft. I didn't do it. So he's going to pull the punches on Fannie Willis. All he had to do was say, get the hell out. You're an inveterate liar. Nathan Wade is a liar. Terrence Brady is a liar. You should all be disbarred. We're going to prosecute you for perjury. We're going to give the case to some person up in northern Georgia, and that would be the end of it.
Yeah.
Same thing with Letita James. She was booed by the firefighters the other day, and now they're trying to find out who booed her. Come on, you guys, don't boo me. This is a house of God.
Yeah.
But you're a godless person, Letita, so it doesn't matter.
Well, Victor, I have a new sponsor, the Solaire Barbecues. And barbecue, yum. I do it all the time, so that rings with me. Just hearing the words makes your mouth water. You may already have a low-temperature, slow-cooking smoker, egg, or pellet barbecue, but in the middle of your busy week, who has that kind of time? You need a hot, fast, solar infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. That heat locks in juices and flavors and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be waiting at the table, will be sitting at the table, enjoying delicious, better than restaurant quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled vegetables. Solaire is a multi-generational veteran-owned business. Their portable carts and built-ins are all made in the U.S., from commercial grade stainless steel, so they build to last. Get your free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill, at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solar infrared gas grills for fast, delicious grilled food every day. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. So, Victor, let's go ahead then and move on to TikTok, who seems to be, as Gordon Chang says, China's instrument of war. But let's take a moment for some messages and come right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. So TikTok, they have a new bill out that it must sell or it'll be banned in the U.S. if the bill passes. People are worried about the Chinese control of TikTok and just how it has infiltrated, especially the minds of the young. And I was wondering your ideas on that.
You know, Trump and a lot of the Trump MAGA people were the people who really alerted the nation that TikTok was a organ of the Chinese Communist Party, and the CEO, and I think he's based in Singapore, doesn't matter, that they were getting information about the United States, and all of the, everything that's on TikTok is filtered through communist auspices. And then Trump stopped. Ta-da! So why did he stop? I think Steve Bannon said he was bought off or something. He wasn't bought off. He stopped because somebody in his entourage or his circle said, Mr. Trump, there's 50 million young voters and they're addicted to this. You know, this would be like cutting off potato chips or Coke. Yeah. You can't do that. They're going to get really angry. They live on TikTok. That's all they care about. They sit in their basement and they're glued to TikTok. So we've got to come up with a different answer. So the only answer that's palatable politically is for Steve Mnuchin and other investors to buy TikTok. And so what I think may be happening is Donald Trump and the MAGA people are blasting TikTok and driving down the value of it. It's a multi-billion dollar, maybe trillion. It's sort of like more valuable than Twitter, I think. But I think they're going to keep telling the Chinese that you were going to have to sell it to an American, and that would be a solution. Because if he bans it and you get rid of it, he's going to lose a lot of voters. And I think, I mean, I would get rid of it, but I'm not in his political position, and people have obviously apprised him, and he's changed his mind. So the next best thing is to get an American consortium. I would have a little bit of caution, because I would tell Mr. Trump, be very careful about the Americans who buy this very valuable means of communication and news dissemination, because as we know, in the last election, you were destroyed by the old Twitter, who banned all information dissemination about the Hunter Biden laptop and went with a lie of 51 intelligence authorities who said it was a product of Russian disinformation. And we know the FBI was hiring Twitter employees and Facebook employees to suppress the news. And we know in a quid pro quo, when they retired, James Baker, for example, chief counsel of the FBI, probably making about 200, he went to Twitter and he got, what, $7 million for that great gambit that he helped organize. So the social media conglomerates can really control the degree of information much better than the Chinese even. And I'm not sure they're any more loyal to the United States than the Chinese are hostile to it, you know? Because they don't have any, if you talk to Mark Zuckerberg, he has no problem interfering in election. He put $419 million to absorb the work of the registrars in key states. He doesn't care. He'll do the same thing next time.
Yeah, he's already probably working absolutely. On doing the same thing.
He sang Bankman-Fried. If you look at the contributors in the 2020, forget the PACs, like 419 for democracy, of course, as that's how they called it. Destroying democracy is keeping democracy alive. But just individual, it was basically four or five people. It was Sam Bankman-Fried with 60 direct millions to Biden's campaign. It was Bloomberg, about 90 million, the Bloomberg affiliate groups to Biden. It was Zuckerberg. And it was just huge left-wing money. And that's not to count what Zuckerberg did in addition when they get these PACs and they have these names like democracy, freedom. And all they are is a mechanism to ensure that people don't vote on election day and pull out an ID to prove that's who they are. They don't want that.
Yeah.
Anything but that.
When I went in to vote just recently, they don't even ask for an ID. You could just say you are anybody and go in and vote. So kind of sad. But let's turn to Donald Trump. Lots of things came out this week about especially January 6th. So we saw that the woman who claimed that Trump tried to grab the steering wheel from a Secret Service driver on January 6th, that was a lie. That Trump asked for additional troops to be around the Capitol on January 6th, and they said no to that. And both of those things were subverted or hidden by that crazy January 6th committee. And then also the last Trump thing is the Georgia judge dismissing six of Trump charges.
Yeah, it really has hurt the credibility of Adam Kinzinger, but especially Liz Cheney. She has posed as the voice of Republican sanity and truth and disinterested morality. And so we know now that a lot of the tapes of the interviews were destroyed. We know they suppressed information about Donald Trump asking for National Guardsmen to ensure there would not be a riot. We know that story that they promulgated that Donald Trump tried to grab the steering wheel of the Secret Service personnel in the car, that was false. Just like we know he didn't say that there were suckers at Normandy. There were 30 people in the room that said he did not. One person ran with that. Just as he said, there was not an Alpha Bank pinging to Trump Tower, just as he said that the Hunter laptop was not Russian disinformation, but Hunter's. Just as he said, if there is any Russian collusion, it is Hillary Clinton's concentrated effort to get a dossier to smear me with the help of Christopher Steele and Russian sources. So at this point, I don't know. These people, for them, it's a religion, so facts don't mean anything. So anybody that I know, I mean, I have colleagues at the Hoover Institution. If I were to say Donald Trump did ask for 10,000 guardsmen and the Secret Service people in the car said he did not grab the wheel, they'd say, you're a liar. You're crazy. Those are Republican talking points. I had a colleague that just told me that. Those are Republican talking points. I said, I think the left is not for democracy. I think they're trying to destroy the Electoral College or the National Voters Compact. I think they're trying to let in two more states, D.C. and Puerto Rico, to get four senators. I think they want to get rid of the 160-year filibuster, only, of course, when they're in the majority. And I think they want to pack the court only when it's in a Republican majority. And I think they want to get Donald Trump off the ballot in as many states they can in the first. And I think they want to get blue state prosecutors and blue state jurisdictions with blue state judges and blue state jury pools to make sure he's not functional as a candidate. And the person across the table said, those are just Republican talking points. He was a Hoover fellow. Those are Republican talking points. And I said in this meeting, I can relate it because I'm not going to tell you where it was or who it was, but I just said, if you think the Republican talking points, that makes it easier for you to refute them. Let's just walk through them. Just tell me that the Democrats are not trying to get him off the ballot, or they're not trying to get get off the get rid of the Electoral College. Well, the Electoral College is a fossilized thing. It was a stupid idea. So they are. And then the filibuster's not in the Constitution. So they are trying to get rid of it. You know, it was just, he couldn't deny it. He just has that. And that's what the left is reduced to. Personal ad hominem invective. And so, you know, just as a sidelight before we go on, this Trump-Biden election, it is not really between Biden and Trump. It's just two issues. Trump has won the election. Nobody wants Biden. They see what he did in the border. They see what he did in foreign policy. They see what he did on energy. They see what he did in inflation. They see what he did with crime. It's a no-brainer. He's going to lose 20% of the black vote, 45% of the Latino vote, etc. The election is Trump versus two people or two entities. Trump versus the election or ballot system. And that's a different story. And that means, will the Republicans be smart enough to be hound dogs and watch with utmost vigilance the mail-in balloting and early mail balloting? If they can stop the fraud and they can get the rejection rate of mail-in balloting back up to 4 or 5% in most states. In other words, if there's a name on a mail-in balloting and it's not on a ballot and it's not on the registrar's list, or it just says Bill rather than Bill Smith, or it's a phony address, and they, can they throw that out then? Yes. The other person Trump is running against is Trump. All he has to do is not give a reason for independents, swing voters, suburban moms, not to vote for an agenda that they want to vote for. They want the border secure. They won't get it with Biden. They want crime to be punished. They won't get it with Biden. They want schools to admit their children on the basis of merit, SAT scores, GPA. They won't get it with Biden. They want to be respected abroad, and they do not want people to take pot shots at Americans. They won't get it with Biden. And so they're going to vote for Trump, unless Trump is against Trump. And if Trump, the little guy with a red union suit and a pitchfork, says to the little Trump with the George Floyd wings and halo, if he says to him, I'm going to mess you up, good Trump. But hey, bird brain Haley, hey, DeSantis, I know you endorse me. You're an idiot. If he keeps doing that, then he's warring with good Trump, heaven Trump. So he's got to suppress red devil suit Trump. And I don't know if he can, but if he can, he'll win with a landslide. He'll win the Senate. He'll win the House. All he has to do is say to the bad Trump on the other left shoulder, get off. I'm going to be sober and judicious for once in my life. I'm not going to attack one Republican. DeSantis is a great guy. He had his agenda was like me. I'm sorry he lost, but you know, a lot of people lose against me, but he's going to be a great leader sometime, and he endorsed me. And Haley hasn't endorsed me, but I'm going to make another call to her. We're going to unite. If he talked like that, the bad Trump would be gone, and the good Trump would defeat him. Biden cannot defeat Trump. No. And Biden's agenda cannot defeat Trump. Two things can defeat Trump: altering the way that we ballot in a way that's going to favor the left and it's not going to be a transparent election, whether you define that with money or protests, all the things that Molly Ball in her Time essay of 21 outlined. Modulating street protests, organizing CEOs in Silicon Valley to give money to watch out for disinformation, meaning suppress the news, changing the voting laws she mentioned, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
That's against Trump, and then the Trump's excesses.
Victor, we have a sponsor for our podcast, Alliance Defending Freedom. Our God-given freedoms are facing unrelenting attacks. It's a battle for truth, and the only way we win is if we stand together. Thankfully, Alliance Defending Freedom has been defending our rights for 30 years and winning. Right now, they're involved in two critical cases before the Supreme Court. They're suing the FDA for endangering the health and safety of women and girls. And in the second case, they're assisting the state of Idaho to defend its law protecting the lives of women and their unborn children. against the Biden administration attempt to override the law and force doctors to perform abortions. And they need your help. With your best gift, you courageously join ADF in fighting critical Supreme Court cases against government lawlessness and help defend our cherished freedoms. Go join ADF.com/Victor. That's joinadf.com/Victor to give now. With your help and pledge, we can raise $5,000 by March 31st for ADF. Visit joinadf.com/Victor to make your best gift right now. I know with your help, we can beat that goal and help make a generational difference for freedom. Thank you, ADF, for sponsoring the BDH show. All right. Well, Victor, how about Christopher Wray? Every time he gets before Congress, he's our Homeland Security guy, I believe. He is frightening. And so recently he said what's coming across the border right now is another 9/11 threat. And it only takes a few people to do a whole lot of harm. And I was wondering what your reflections on his testimony.
I think he understands that Donald Trump may be president and that when Donald Trump's president, he will be fired. So he's decided to tell the truth. So he's not saying, oh, I have a meeting. I got to get in my private jet and go to the Adirondack. Sorry. Or he's not saying, you know, I won't tell you. I can't remember how many FBI informants we had on January 6th. Or he's not saying, we kind of sort of maybe surveilled parents at school board meetings. Or we kind of sort of did, I don't know what, maybe we kind of had a performance art raid at Mar-a-Lago, or we kind of went out after James O'Keefe and kind of sent a met, that kind of stuff. That's over with. So now he's back to being a normal FBI agent, and he's going to say things that his masters at the DOJ don't like. And what they don't like to hear is they opened the border. And as a result of deliberately trying to alter the demography and the constituencies for elections and flip red states blue, they were perfectly willing to have people like Lake and Riley die. And they let in 8 to 10 million people. And with that was enough fentanyl to kill 100,000 Americans every day. And they don't care. And now he's saying this is dangerous. We don't know who's coming in. We don't know what's coming in. People are now not just coming from the Latinate world, but all over the world. Nobody knows why 25,000 military-age males from China are coming. Nobody knows where these people who are coming in have the wherewithal to pay the cartels anywhere from 3,500 to 10,000, or if they cannot pay them, they come into the United States and go to work for them to earn back. And if you owe the cartel $5,000 or $6,000 for getting smuggled in the United States and you move to Bakersfield, do you think, well, I'm in the United States now and I really fooled the Mexican cartel. I said I was going to pay them $5,000 and here I am. I've got a nice little job. They know where you are. They're going to kill you and they know you're going to kill you. And they're going to kill you. So we've got basically people in the United States that will be replicating cartel business and amplifying it. Not that they're crooks themselves. So Christopher Wray knows all this now. And he knows that in the past, he did things that he thought Merrick Garland and Joe Biden wanted him to do that otherwise were not consistent with FBI autonomy. And now he knows the gig is up. That this administration failed, that it's probably going to be out of office, and that he's done enough things in the Robert Mueller, Andrew McCabe, James Comey tradition of obfuscating, lying, having amnesia, that Donald Trump, if he should be president, is going to fire him. So he's liberated. I'm glad. I'm glad for him. Now he's telling the truth. And the Biden administration, Mr. Mayorkas, are furious at him.
Yeah. Yeah, as everybody should be furious at him and the Biden administration. Victor, let's take a break, come back, and talk a little bit about the Haitian situation. Stay with us, and we'll be back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. You can find Victor at victorhanson.com. And the name of the website is The Blade of Perseus. Come join us for $5 a month or $50 a year or free. And you can, there's lots that are free on the website, and you can get onto our newsletter. So you get a little newsletter three or four times a week with the latest stuff on the website. Victor, so the Haitian government has collapsed and apparently gangs are in control of it, particularly one man named Barbecue. And the U.S. may be trying to work with him. They don't really quite know what to do. And the second thing about that is Haitians are coming into this Haitians are coming into our borders and being shipped on these secret flights by the Biden administration as quote unquote newcomers to cities all across the United States. So I was wondering, thoughts on this current Haitian crisis?
They're very angry at Elon Musk because there had been circulating rumors that these Barbecue. No, why is he called Barbecue?
I know, scary. What is it?
That he eats people. And that was some of the rumors that were going around unsubstantiated. And of course, supposedly Elon Musk trafficked in those. And he said something that cannibal gangs are. And then the left said, how dare you? This only emphasizes or spreads the lies, the racist lies and stereotypes that black people, i.e. in the early colonial days in Africa, were found to be cannibals. That's not true. I mean, cannibalism had no particular racial affinity. The Aztecs were cannibals. Well, they had sort of a sauce they made of blood. They wore human skin and they ate the leg. You can read the journals of Bernal Diaz, even the Tlaxcalans, his allies, when they killed a few Aztecs, he looked over at the other's campfire and he said, they're eating people. And for all of the Spanish faults, remember the Cortez, and they were brutal people, no doubt about it. But there were three things that they said that they were trying to stamp out: human sacrifice, cannibalism, and then they had, you know, this was very controversial today, and sodomy. They felt that all three of them were mortal sins and the Aztecs were guilty of them. But I'm not interested in the other. But anyway, Elon Musk said this, and his ex or his Twitter company is now flooded with claims that the Haitians are engaging in cannibalism. And part of that is the sensationalism of news stories that show bodies just in the street rotting and that were burned up. Nobody knows whether. I was listening to a news outlet today driving, and a person who just got back from Haiti said that was true. But I have no idea it's true. But this is a periodic serial fact that Haiti is always a mess. There's two cycles in Haiti. You either get a thug like Mr. Duvalier, and he kept it lid on it for 30 years, but he was a psychopath dictator, or you have some attempt at consensual government, and half the parliament, not half, 95% of the parliament are gang members. And then it doesn't work. And then the Clintons went down there, George W. Bush went down there, the Obamas had a problem, Donald Trump did. You talk to U.S. servicemen, half of them have been to Haiti.
Yeah.
And at some point, the guy that, you know, the El Salvador president said he could handle it. And he said, you know, he just got reelected in a landslide. He said, give me the tools, I'll help.
He knows how to put them in jail, as he did in his own country.
70,000.
I know, it's crazy.
And he humiliated them. He'd strip them down to their boxer shorts. And he made them kneel, and then everybody was so outraged.
Could he come up here and help our government?
Everybody was so outraged that has a private security bi-coastal mansion, right? All the people who... The biggest amorality of this week was, to tell you about it, it's really sad, is that Joe Biden gave that speech, the State of the Union, and he came prepared, as we said with Jack, to refute any calls to say her name. And then he said, Lincoln Riley, the USC football coach. And that didn't bother him. And he only mentioned her because he felt he had to mention her. And then he didn't even take the time to learn her real name. However, when he said she was killed by an illegal, Mr. Abera, the murderer, then he, the next day, said, well, he was kind of technically illegal. That was the first back step. And then he apologized for saying illegal. So what he basically said is, I am more worried about offending an illegal alien murderer, the status of him, than I am a U.S. citizen to commemorate her. And that's, I wrote a column, I mentioned that because I wrote a column today about life and death and the left's loving of humanity and they hate humans. So I don't want to get on a sidetrack, but if you've been watching, Sammy, we have an epidemic. What would we call it? An epidemic of air traffic controller errors, an epidemic of Boeing jets errors, an epidemic of United Airlines errors. And you know what got me really upset was I wrote about this and it came out today. And I, you know, I said, and my point was this, that the CEO of United said that 50% of his pilots will soon be DEI. And the Boeing Motor Company, Boeing Plane Company said that a chief criterion for compensation adjudication is going to be inclusion. And the Federal Aviation Administration said that DEI is now one of their great agendas and a zero-sum game of people's lives. 3 million people fly every day, 45,000 flights. And if the plane maker and the people who fly the plane and the people who adjudicate the person who flies the plane are all on the same page that merit, competency, experience is not their primary agenda, then you're going to have stuff. And what is the stuff? And, you know, do you know 2 weeks ago, I guess that's just this week, we had that United flight from San Francisco to Mexico that had to make an emergency landing. Then we had the United flight from San Francisco to Sydney, Australia. It had a maintenance issue. That's what they call it. They don't give us the details. Sometimes they have to give us the details, like the flight that just came back from Chicago, because it had a maintenance issues, plural.
Uh-oh.
And then we had at Houston, you know, George Bush Airport in Houston. Remember the United plane last week that was taxiing off the runway?
Yeah.
And it ended up in the grass, stuck?
Yeah.
And I guess the pilot thought, I'm just going to go spin a wheelie on a 45. But it was a 90 degree, or that's what's one of the allegations. And if anybody says to me, well, Victor, you're just exaggerating, okay, I'll keep going.
Yeah.
And there was the same week, there was that flight from Houston to Florida that was forced to make an emergency landing. One of the engines caught fire. Was that the one that had bubble wrap in it?
Yeah, I think that was.
So I think it was a part came in bubble wrap. Yeah. I don't know what.
Wasn't
it was.
There a wheel that popped off?
Well, yes, I hadn't mentioned that. The same time, you know, that United flight from San Francisco, before San Francisco, from Hawaii, it had mid engine failure. Remember, it had to go back, and then we had we had the dozens of people who were on that Chilean airline. That was a Boeing 787. And all of a sudden, they had a technical event during the flight, which caused a strong movement. strong movement that injured 50 people.
50 people. That's
yes.
incredible.
And of course, we had the wheel falling off, as you pointed out. So my point is that was all within a 10-day period. And 70% of what I just said were Boeing planes and 90% were United Airlines. And there was probably some FAA involvement in these, some of them. And then I thought today was driving back. Don't traffic in rumors. People get angry. They're saying that you're racist, you're unfair, you're suggesting that when DEI does not put merit as its primary objective, but how we look or our gender or whatever, therefore there is in this zero-sum game less time to focus on safety issues. So you better apologize. And I was in Gilroy, California, and on the radio it said they just had another plane that had to go back. It had a maintenance, a United plane.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. So well, is the moral?
It's going to continue unless they stop it.
Yeah. Is the moral of the story to take Delta or American, or are they doing the same things as well, do you think? I mean, is the United
I'm just
different?
Saying that in the last 10 years, the number of near misses at airports has doubled. And I'm just saying as well that in January of this year, we had all of the computers down and they canceled flights for 24 hours. So whoever the computer people are at the FAA or whoever these pilots are at United, and what I'm trying to say is this, I don't care who's flying it. I don't care if an elephant is flying it. If you get a giraffe and he gets a perfect, I'll put him in the cockpit. If he's 6 years old and he's a great pilot. But when United starts to brag and says, this is the first time in history where we've had an all-black crew and an all-black pilot, that doesn't matter to me. I don't care. He should be saying this. We have had now 30,000 straight flights without a maintenance issue. But I am suggesting to you that in all aspects of life, the moment that you start to emphasize something that does not that's not part of your directive. Your directive is to pick up people in the airport, take off, land, and make sure they're safe and comfortable at an affordable price. And if you can't do that, then you have no business being distracted with all these peripheral issues. Do you think that if you have a plane with 200 passengers and given American demography and you know, 50 of them are African Americans. You're going to ask them and say, "Do you feel comfortable that everybody in here now is black piloting the plane, or do you feel more comfortable that you don't know what the race is of the people piloting the plane, but they have never had a safety issue in there?" What are they going to say? Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
So, and you know, it's all of these CEOs, because it says specifically that Boeing and United corporate leadership gets promoted and compensated on the basis of the degree to which they change the demography of their crews and maintenance crews and pilots. And so that's an incentive, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to turn it just like the university. You'll never get it out of those businesses.
That Scott Kirby, I think, was the CEO of United. He said his goal was to have 50% DEI. He didn't say my goal is not to have one wheel go off in the next 10 years. He didn't say not one hydraulic issue. He didn't say, I can guarantee you that as long as I'm CEO of United, we won't have one plane taxi off and get stuck in the grass. Sorry, won't happen. Or I'm going to say, as a Boeing CEO, I can guarantee you that our various 737 Maxes of various designations, they won't have hydraulic issues. They will not. And you know, our beautiful 787, it won't just take off. It will, people are flying it, and apparently if you don't do what? Reboot the automatic system, then it, for a brief second, the pilot loses control, and it makes a, I don't know, it just makes a complete dive, and people are up on the ceiling of the plane, and 50 of them get hurt, and they're scared for the rest of their life.
Wasn't it Boeing that said, well, we did fire the guy who was the head of the unit that for the door that came off?
On the Alaskan airline?
Yeah. And but I thought, well, that's might be a bad thing if all they're doing is hiring on DEI. But who's the next guy that's going to replace him? You know what I mean? Like, well,
it's everybody should realize that what is very dangerous about the left is they don't care about a person who gets killed on an airplane if the larger humane quote-unquote goal is met, that the crew meets DEI objectives. They don't care if Laken Riley is killed or Kate Steinle is killed if the greater humane quote-unquote goal is obtained of an open border. They don't care if a young woman is knocked flat on a basketball court by a biological male in a female sports, or if she's playing volleyball and some male spikes a 90-mile-an-hour ball into her face. They don't care. They don't care if a woman's records are just destroyed by men competing, if the objective is transgenderism is a third sex and it is a civil right. And that's how they look at things. And the same thing is about climate change. They don't care if you don't have enough money to turn on your stove because they banned natural gas, or you can't afford to drive your diesel pickup or your gas pickup, or you're now mandated to get an electric car and you're stuck somewhere in Bakersfield because you ran out of battery power and you're sitting on the side of the road. They don't care.
No.
They do not care about you. And if you don't believe me, just go back and read a lot about the Soviet Union from 1917 to 1989. They don't care about people. Remember that famous line? It's in Crusade in Europe, where Eisenhower meets Zhukov, and he says, you know, the Nazis have very sophisticated landmines, and they took a great toll on our Sherman tanks. How do you guys do it? You have the T-34? Is it not vulnerable? No. No, we send our people out in front, and they get blown up, and then we find out where they get blown up, and then we drive the tanks over them. And so, Eisenhower sort of chuckle. He didn't mean it in a bad way, just said, oh my God, this is our ally.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Well, maybe something encouraging is that young Cameron Blazik of an Indiana high school who had a flag on the back of his truck, and he was going to be charged with insubordination by the high school.
I love
and they
that.
Had to roll that back. I know
it. I was listening to him on the, I've been doing a lot of solo driving, and I like this guy. He drives up and it's always some little authoritarian, wannabe superintendent that's a principal or vice principal. And he says, you're insubordinate because I told you you can't have what? A flag? And remember what he said the reason was? It might be offensive to some groups. In other words, he should have been honest and said, look, we got a bunch of guys in the school that hate the United States. They can't stand it. They hate us. They hate America. And you're offending them as a U.S. citizen by showing pride in your country. What's wrong with you? So they were going to write him up, and then all of a sudden they had a spontaneous demonstration. Everybody drove to school with flags on their pickups. And it's kind of like Spartacus. Who's Spartacus? Who am I? Should have had Cory Booker out there.
Well, Victor, we have some nice comments from the Apple Podcasts. One is absolutely best. I enjoy each conversation. The only downside of this series is that there are only 3 episodes per week.
Wait. There's four.
We have something for this person. That is from PRR, an informed citizen, as it says. Yes, so we have 4 episodes, so don't miss us on the weekend. I have a feeling you're missing.
Yeah, we have
missing.
4, and then I'm trying to do an extra one.
Yes, we had five this week.
Tim Sheehy, and yeah. Everybody should vote for that guy in Montana. He's a wonderful guy, and he could win the Senate for the conservative traditionalist cause. And you Californians, vote for Steve Garvey and help him out, but if you've got a little extra cash, give to him.
Yeah,
because he's up against it. He's up against the entire Democratic money machine.
Yeah. And that was the Wednesday podcast, so don't miss that. And also, you can, for this PRR, Informed Citizen, Victor has a new book out, and it's called The End of Everything. And Victor, I was wondering,
I'm worried about the title. When is it coming out?
May 7th.
You should read it, because I'm worried it's prescient now, because I wrote it when Jake Sullivan said that the Middle East was his calmest portfolio. But I mentioned in the epilogue, after I look at why Alexander destroyed Thebes, or why Scipio Aemilianus destroyed Carthage, or why Mehmet II destroyed Constantinople, why Cortez destroyed Tenochtitlan, I give reasons why they did, and reasons why their targets allowed them to be destroyed. And you know what's funny? That paradigm is true throughout time and space. It's true today. And if you think that that can't happen today, you should just collate what Erdogan has said about the Greeks. There's only 10 million Greeks. And what they said about the Cypriots, and what he said about the Armenians, and given Turkey's past, or say what all of the people in the Politburo and Putin have said about Ukraine, or see what the Chinese have said about Taiwan. I had a request. Can I say this? I don't know if it's indiscreet. It's selling its pre-sales are really good, and there's a lot of foreign editions have been bought. But one of them came from our big, big country, who is our rival, who won't be named.
And I was just going to guess at that for you, but I won't guess.
And I have one. I don't even have a sentence. I have a phrase. I list all the countries that have threatened other countries with nuclear weapons. Pakistan has threatened India. Russia's threatened Ukraine. Iran, soon to be nuclear, has threatened Israel. Turkey, without nuclear weapons, has threatened Armenia, Cyprus, Greece. I could go on. And this big country has threatened Taiwan.
I don't know which one it could be.
And all I said is that, and this big country is the largest book market for militaries outside the United States. So I get a little note from I don't know who it was. It was the Foreign Rights Department. I have a wonderful agent, Glenn Hartley and Lin Chu. I've known them for 40 years. I trust them with my life. And they were wonderful when they heard about this request, because their eyes didn't get big with dollar signs. Their heart and brain got angry. And anyway, the request was just to get rid of four little words out of 110,000, and you get lucrative book sales in this big country. And so I wasn't even considering it, and I thought, well, maybe somebody, and they just wrote, this is outrageous, don't dare, we represent Victor, we wouldn't dare do that. It was really great. And so they canceled it.
Yeah.
And so my little red union-suited devil who sat on my left shoulder, hey, Victor, just a few words, what do you care? And then my nice little angel on the other said, don't you have any integrity, is money everything? So it was... the good guys won.
Yeah. All right. Well, Victor, that's the end of our show. And we'd like to thank our listeners. And I'd like to thank Jack Fowler, too. He and you do one of the most excellent shows in podcasts. And I always aspire to do as well as he does for your podcast. So I don't think I quite meet the level. Jack has lots more knowledge about current politics and meaning the last 50 years. He's just excellent on that. And so I can't quite get there. But we really appreciate his enduring support of you, your podcasts, and everything. So we'd like to thank him at the end of the show as well.
Yes. Jack has been with me with the National Review. I met Jack Fowler in 2002, 22 years. And I joined up with National Review, and he and I departed amicably from National Review in tandem.
Yeah, so good. So thank you, everybody. This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we are signing off.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.